Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name is Mike Calvin. I'm joined by John Cross of the Daily Mirror and Jonathan Northcroft of the Sunday Times. Suddenly, the impossible seemed very possible. Tottenham are the best team in the Premier League, according to Antonio Conte. They've cut Chelsea's lead to 4 points and they meet in the FA Cup on Saturday. Game on, John.
It really is game on. And I do think, quite apart from the FA Cup at stake, I do think it would have a huge effect on the title race, just simply because of confidence and belief. It would, if Tottenham win on Saturday, bearing in mind that Chelsea then play first in the next instalment of the title race, I think they will have 24 hours less recovery time. I think they will feel very, very flat. And I think they would find it very difficult to overcome Southampton, so shouldn't underestimate this importance as a game, as a fixture, in, not just for the FA Cup, but I do actually think the winners of this could end up going on to win the double. It's that big. It really is huge. And you have to worry a little bit about Chelsea because they will be flat. Let's be honest about this. I think that Chelsea have been overall the best team this season by some distance. But on current form, it's very difficult to disagree with Conte because Tottenham are on fire. They're playing with a zip, with a momentum, with a great inventive and wonderful, wonderful style. And at the moment, you'd have to put them as strong favourites, I think, against Chelsea.
And Tottenham have become the neutrals team, haven't they, because of the, you know, the vibrancy of their play. What about the way that they've built that team in terms of, you know, it's almost like built organically, isn't it? You know, young players, common cause. What does it say about the game that someone like Tottenham can still provide a team in that way?
Well, it says, first of all, the game is wasting a huge amount of money and also a huge sort of resource that's always been there, which is young talent. I think when you talk about there not being any young players anymore, well, Pochettino, he hasn't created these young players, but by giving them a chance, he's created them as top-level footballers. We might not have known if Harry Kane or Dele Alli were going to be top Premier League footballers had Pochettino not had the faith to use them. And there's an ongoing process there that reminds me a little bit about what, you know, Alex Ferguson did at Manchester United, where it's not just about the generation that's playing now, but you see the Anomas, the Harry Winks, the Wimmers that sort of come in and get 4 or 5 games here and there, and, you know, in future seasons they'll be getting their chance as well. The only thing I'd say is it has been easier for Pochettino to do this at Tottenham because he doesn't have the pressure to deliver instant success that the biggest managers have. And Jose Mourinho was talking about this the other week, saying that, you know, as at Manchester United, you have to deliver and deliver now. And that's his problem with using, you know, Rashford and Fosu Mensah and all that from the start. If you look at Pochettino, I think he's finished fifth and third in 2 seasons, not got to cup final. He's doing an incredible job in building the club, as we've said, but he doesn't have that pressure to deliver results now. And I think, if you look at a top, you know, Manchester United, Manchester City, Chelsea, if the manager there had finished fifth and third and not got to a cup final, they'd be under an enormous amount of pressure now, which he isn't. So we have to recognise that, but I admire what he's doing, and I wish more managers would just reach into their own youth teams and have a look around the way he's done.
So in other words, really, Tottenham have got to prove to us that they can play under pressure, under that weight of expectation.
They have a bit, yeah. I do feel that with Pochettino, the next step has to be to win a trophy. It has to be. I know that sounds obvious, yeah. Mm-hmm. But he has laid wonderful foundations. But I have to say, I thought they messed up in Europe. I mean, to miss out on the Champions League qualification into the knockout stages, and then Europa League, really, that's a very poor, excuse, really. I mean, obviously the Wembley curse, will be mentioned at great length again. It hasn't been a happy hunting ground for them. And you wonder whether the psychological factor will come into it. But much more than that, I think for Pochettino to go from a brilliant manager with great potential and with building an incredibly exciting team to one of the greats, if you like, he has to take this team of potential, of young talent, show that they can handle it and kind of take on to the next level by winning silverware. I still think they're the outsiders in the title race. It's Chelsea's to lose. It has to be. It's 4 points. But if they were to win an FA Cup, for example, or some major silverware in the next couple of years, and I still regard that, the FA Cup, as a major silverware, make no mistake about that. I love the trophy. Then I do think that kind of proves Pochettino as a really established young manager. Because at the moment, he took them so far last season. I think he's built such an exciting team and such a promising squad that it would be wrong if they don't take the next step and win some silverware.
Mm. Do you think that, we all know in football that money just doesn't talk, it screams. Has he got the added pressure of knowing that economically, will they be able to keep an Ali or a Harry Kane in the long term? In other words, they've got to win now.
Yeah, he has got that pressure. I don't think it's a now in the sense of this season, but that's going to loom very, very quickly, especially for Dele Alli, I think, above all, because every club in Europe is going to want a player like that. Harry Kane, maybe slightly less so. I can see him being Tottenham captain for a long time and maybe that relationship being the centrepiece of his career. I think what Pochettino has got, though, is this air about him of sort of having an adventure with this young group of players and ignoring things like that to a certain extent, almost like, do you want to be with me? This is fun, we're going to do this together. I was at the game on Saturday, I was watching Arthur Boric come off the pitch, and he was embracing Pochettino like his long-lost big brother. And I saw Adam Lallana do that last season when Liverpool visited, and he's got this charisma, this air, where he's saying to the players, look, there's something else other than money that you can play for here, you can play for this, for us, and I love that about him.
And he's also not been slow in having a dig at Chelsea's money-driven policy, with Abramovich and everything else. So he's pretty cute. He's putting the pressure on Chelsea, isn't he?
Yeah, I thought it was cute by Conte, just trying to turn up the mind games a little bit by saying the pressure's on Tottenham in a way, because he's saying, well, if they are the best team, and he clearly thinks that they are on form at the moment, then go on, deliver it. And I think Pochettino is no stranger to that. I think he's very, very clever at what he says. I think he's matured so much while he's been at Tottenham. He talks much more confidently. You can see it even in press conferences. And people might say, that's irrelevant. But actually, in delivering a message to players in a dressing room, I think it's incredibly relevant how you get across that point. And he has that connection with the players. And I thought one of the best sort of kind of post-match press conferences I've read in recent times was what he said after Burnley. So they're 0-0 at Burnley. They know they've got to absolutely win at Burnley to kind of maintain this title momentum. He says he detailed in full after that game exactly what he said at half-time. He said they didn't play well. They'd had two injuries. Normally gives them 5 minutes to cool off and doesn't say a word. Allows them to collect their thoughts, but he got them into the dressing room, said, we're going to change it here, we're going to change our process now as well. He changed the formation, got straight into the players, got straight into what they needed to do individually and what they needed to change as a group, and they went on to win the game. And I just thought it was a fascinating insight into managers. So few managers are bold and change things and do substitutions and change players and change systems. Pochettino is an absolute master of that. I think it's one of his best qualities. His connection with players, but also his ability to change. His in-game management is outstanding. Yeah.
What are we learning about Antonio Conte in this whole situation?
Well, we're going to learn a lot more because Chelsea have been in almost this bubble. As John said, they've been the best team this season overall by quite a long way. And because of that, they've probably had about 8 or 9 weeks of being top of the league by a margin without even being a question asked about whether they're going to win it or not, and all of us just heaping praise on how brilliant Conte is, how brilliant the players are. And it's happened so fast, but they've got to snap out of that now and deal with a proper contest. And we will see a different side of Conte now. I was surprised at him at Old Trafford on Sunday. I wasn't at the game watching him, though. He just looked a bit passive as management, which isn't what we associate with him at all. He's changed it once. You know, they had a crisis point in the autumn and he obviously changed formation and brought that out. He's going to have to do it again. And that temper, that kind of emotion that I think he keeps pent up, you can see, how's that going to work now? I mean, it's really interesting.
So in that sense, are we seeing the ultimate revenge of Jose Mourinho? Because he's shown basically everyone how to deal with Chelsea. You know, shackle the wing backs, and put pressure, you know, through a man marker on people like Hazard. Yeah. People now look at Chelsea and they think they can get at them.
They do, and I thought it was fascinating, wasn't it? It was Jose's revenge. I mean, he was fired up. What he said post-match after the cup game, Judas is still number one.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a brilliant remark. It was one of the quotes of the season, wasn't it?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it was
yeah.
a fabulous, typical Mourinho soundbite, you know, making the point that I've still won more titles and trophies than you know, this guy, Conte, who clearly slightly is rankled by. It's like almost like sort of a spurned lover, isn't it, basically? He's sort of kind of jealous and he makes little barbs, doesn't he, about the counter-attacking team and things like that.
Keeps banging on about him being the best defensive coach in the world.
I don't think he likes it, does he? But I do think that Mourinho is a past master at that. Yeah. I wondered whether Mourinho had slightly lost his knack of being able to manage and sort of really oversee kind of one-off games and win off one-off games. But he clearly showed that he's got that within his locker still. He found the template. I think it has to be said, something playing up two up against Chelsea's back three and pushing them all the way, which is just so, you know, not the done thing at the moment, isn't it? Play with two strikers. But it seems to be the way. And Chelsea, I think, have to find a different solution from somewhere, that if you are going to, you know, mark Hazard out, kind of getting him on the game, the midfield balance, trying to work that way. What's happened to Costa? Costa's performance is off a cliff. And basically, they haven't got a backup, an alternative to him. But it's not just about goals. His all-round performance
is shocking.
He's not got
over not going to China, has he?
No, probably not. I think he was done okay since January. But the last 6 weeks or so has been very, very poor. I thought his performance at Bournemouth, which I was at, I mean, blimey, they've won the game 3-1 and he's offered nothing. The ball's bounced off him. It's, you know, I know he sort of kind of, he will claim a goal, but it was a massive deflection down as an own goal. But his all-round performance was shocking, really poor.
Doesn't look like Costa is going to be at Chelsea next season,
being
realistic. We also know now for definite that John Terry won't be there. One, were you surprised at the timing of that announcement this week? And two, can you give me a retrospective look at how good John Terry has been, not just for Chelsea, but for English football?
I was surprised. I spent a bit of time with Gus Hiddink a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying, and he's influential still at Chelsea, you know, he's still got Abramovich's ear, and he said he was telling them that somebody like John Terry can't leave the club. You know, he's got to be involved in the future sort of Chelsea in whatever role that he wants. And the same would go for people like Lampard. So I thought that there might just be a seamless move from Terry into a coaching role next season. I didn't expect him to be playing for Chelsea next season, I'll be honest, but I thought we might see a retirement and a new coaching job for him, the way Steven Gerrard is at Liverpool. So it's interesting that he still feels he's got it in him. It's interesting the timing, given it's not Chelsea under a slight bit of pressure. Maybe John's applied a bit more pressure in that way of his. I think somebody will take him. Plenty of clubs will take him. You know, Tony Pulis will never look at age, and he's already interested, isn't he? And there's others. In terms of quality, I think the thing that's always struck me about John Terry is we've sort of categorised him as the kind of classic English centre-half and his contemporary Rio Ferdinand as a great football-playing centre-half. And I actually think they're both a lot closer to each other than you'd think. Terry's a fabulous footballer, brilliant passer of the ball, great touch, great skills, scored a lot of goals as a central defender. And his technique and his game appreciation's always struck me. That's before you get to the whole, you know, brave-hearted head on the line,
leader, legend, all that stuff.
He can do all that. He's always had that. But he's a good footballer, John Terry, really good footballer. And it's a shame in a different national team setup. We always go back to this. John Terry and Rio Ferdinand and the midfield they had in front of them, you know, should have won a few things.
Well, John, you know, the way John is talking, Arsenal might need a centre-off like that.
I was just thinking of that. I wonder what his team... I think, you know, West Brom, rightly so. Bournemouth were linked in January, weren't they? And I definitely think there was interest there. But what about Hire? You know, because he's still got so much to offer. I'll tell you what, it's really interesting, the timing, isn't it? I can't help but feel, as Jonathan rightly says, John Terry kind of sometimes does push things a bit hard. But I wonder whether it's also on the back of what must have been devastating for him on Sunday. Because he's so proud and he's so, still such a good player that basically when the call comes, it's Zouma. Yeah. And I know that it would have been sort of kind of reverting the defence because he would play on the other side. And so you're kind of mixing it up and stuff. But Terry's a good player. And kind of, I did think they looked defensively weak. That was obvious on Sunday. And Terry must be thinking, well, you know, if I'm not one of the first three in the back three, and then Zouma's getting the call, as he did indeed the other week, you know, against City, then Terry must be thinking, blimey, you know, I'll have to go. And because I do admire him, and I still think he's got so much more to offer. I think if we break it down, I think the best central defensive partnership in Premier League era was Terry and Carvalho. I think they had everything. They were absolutely magnificent. I know people would throw sort of Ferdinand and Vidic, and Arsenal would offer up Campbell and Toure. But I think that Terry, as a brave heart, I think, and still as a defensive quality, he could play in a top six team, in my view. Man City, honestly, and then sort of you can't tell me that Otamendi's better than John Terry. No chance. Mm. And as you say, I mean, Gabriel sometimes looks as if he's a fan who's won a competition to play for Arsenal. So, I mean, blimey, you know, it's Terry would be better. Yeah. You know, for the
what about that
guys.
Arsenal defence? You know, if you look at it, Sunday, another really intriguing FA Cup semi-final. Wenger. Maybe surprised a few of us by going three at the back in that win at Middlesbrough. Do you read much into that?
I this sounds really cynical. I almost read that Wenger is running out of ideas and he's just trying things now. Because, you know, we've got 25 years of evidence that he doesn't do back fours. He doesn't believe in it as a system. And I feel he's just trying something now, looking for answers, I'm afraid. That sounds a very negative interpretation, given that they won the game, but didn't look terribly convincing, and I think it's just the sort of fashion at the moment. I don't think Arsenal have got two good centre-backs. They certainly don't have three. And I think to play three at the back, you need four or five. You need three and some reserve. So I don't see it as a long-term system for them. That said, against Manchester City, they're going to need numbers back there. They might even have to go back five because there was that attacking trio is fantastic form for City at the moment. They've got problems obviously elsewhere in the pitch, but they will be tested in that game.
What's your reading of the situation at Arsenal, John?
Well, I do think Wenger will stay on for another 2 years and oversee a building thing. I think it's always been the intention to you know, from some time now.
The vibes aren't good though, are they?
No, basically, I think it's time for change. I really do. But I don't think that will come this summer. I think he'll sign a new 2-year contract. And I think it's always been the intention to kind of leave it until the end of the season, let the dust settle. If they can pick up an FA Cup along the way, sneak into the top four, which I'll have to say I don't fancy them to do either. But I guess City, you have to make red hot favourites to win on Sunday. Mm-hmm. But City are the one team out of the four that Arsenal were, I think, the weakest of the semi-finalists. Ironically, could City have defensive lapses? So Arsenal will take heart. They wouldn't stand a chance, I don't think, against the other two. But they might get the odd chance. But we're clutching at straws. And I think Wenger and Arsenal are selling it as a rebuild. And basically, they want the guy who's sadly kind of been self-destructive in, you know, taking apart what was a very promising sort of set of circumstances. He's actually pulled that apart himself, and now he's being asked to rebuild what he's kind of left you know, a trail of destruction. Well, it's just farcical. It shouldn't be allowed to happen.
Because there's really a really strange mixture of incompetence and complacency, not just in the manager's office, by the way, in the boardroom as well. You know, look at how many contracts are at a key stage of renewal now. How have they let it get that bad?
And this has happened for years. I mean, this journal attest, you know, the last contracts these players signed, some of them, like your Oxes and so on, were left to run, weren't they? Mm. It's the way they've always done things. It's because it's been based so much around one man and his idiosyncratic way of doing things. And it's fine once that's worked, but it's as if everybody else has taken no responsibility whatsoever and let Arsene run it, which is their fault. You know, it's not his fault. The executives should have been making stronger decisions a long time ago, just in terms of the nuts and bolts of the club. Recruitment, I think, has been a problem for Arsenal for several years. That department should probably have been shaken up. It seems to be a lack of clarity there. Who's really doing the scouting? Who's in charge? Certainly the contracts with old Dick Lowe sort of waiting till the last minute before phoning people. And that's been going on for years, hasn't it?
Because Wenger's almost painted himself into a corner over Sanchez by saying, look, you know, there's a lot of talk about £300,000 a week. I'm not breaking my wage structure.
Yeah, I think Sanchez is in a great position now because basically he can ride it out. He's on a fantastic earning already. I mean, my information is that sort of Ozil's been offered 280 a week and Sanchez not quite that much, certainly in excess of 250. And it's just, I think Sanchez likes London, likes Arsenal, he's in a great position. So he could see out the contract. If things improve, then maybe he can sign on again. But the one thing that Arsenal would be desperate not to do is sell him to Chelsea or sell him to Man City. And I think they'd rather run the risk of leaving him into the final year if they can't persuade PSG to pay up. But look, Sanchez overall, I know he's quite good at Middlesbrough, the last couple of months he's been so poor. And his attitude has been very, very poor, I think, on the pitch at times and behind the scenes. So really, you know, I know his stats are great, but I have to say sometimes that the destruction that's going on behind the scenes is belied by kind of what's going on the pitch at the moment. It's a big summer for Sanchez, big decisions to make. I don't think it's necessarily that they'll either sell, and they certainly won't want to a Premier League rival. But they've got huge decisions to make. But I'd be surprised if he goes long-term in the rebuild with Sanchez in those plans.
Mm. A lot of talk that Guardiola's going to rebuild as well. I found it really interesting that he's spent a lot of time stressing the need for mental strength. He's obviously got doubts about that team, hasn't he?
Yeah, so he should. I mean, they dealt so badly with that Champions League knockout tie against Monaco. Even the victory at home was a kind of very haphazard victory where they, you know, they came back from the brink having imploded. They've not done well in the big games. And John's right that the one team that Arsenal probably have got a chance against is City, because they haven't got a great big team record in this season's Premier League. I'm not sure about Guardiola's mental strength this year. I'm not questioning it overall as a manager. He's a genius. But he's been spooked at times. He's been very emotional at times. I think a little bit erratic in his pronouncements that we've seen anyway.
Mm. He says there's more pressure in Italy or in Spain or in Germany.
He doesn't look like he's feeling that. And I don't think he was under as much pressure at Bayern Munich. He was probably under as much pressure at Barca. I think that's a real goldfish bowl job. I just think there are questions about how he's handled it as well as his team. But the other thing that's interesting to me is that, you know, defence is a glaring issue for Manchester City. Every time Guardiola talks about something, he talks about something else. It's attack. You know, we need to attack better, or it's our mental strength. I mean, address the first thing and then go from there, I'd have thought.
Mm. Let's look at Manchester United, if we could. A huge reaffirmation of Mourinho's style in that win over Chelsea. What about the Europa League? Do you get the sense that he's prioritising that?
Yeah, I do. I thought it was clever management on Sunday because he's shaken up the squad, shaken up the starting lineup. He's got fresh legs in there that's beaten Chelsea. But actually, at the same time, he's managed to rest Zlatan, you know, for Thursday. And it is impressive. He's managing to turn over this team. And look, having watched that first leg in Belgium. I just felt that United had far too good. I mean, they are on a different level. They should be winning that game, finishing that second leg.
It should
off.
Have been about 2-0 or 3-0.
Of course, it?
It
should be dead in the water now, and they should be through effectively. And now they've got a little bit of a nervousness, I think, probably about them. But I think they'll get through. But I think it's fantastic that United are taking it seriously, and I hope that they go on to win it, because we need English clubs to kind of really take a pride in this and show that it's important in the Europa League. I mean, Liverpool reached the final last year. They could have easily won it, I think, with, you know, better luck on the day. They're outclassed in the final. Let's make no mistake about that. But Chelsea have won it previously. But the vast majority of clubs, in English terms, see it as a nuisance, an inconvenience. Mm-hmm. And let's be honest, it's a marriage of convenience for Man United in a way, because they're struggling to get top four. But now they're on the up. But I think it's fantastic that someone like Mourinho has embraced it and is trying to win it. And hopefully they can light down, because I really like the competition. I think, you know, I want English clubs to do well in it.
Do you think the trophy could be Zlatan's leaving present?
I think he'll stay another year, actually. But the question marks are there a little bit in the mind as to whether that would be the best thing for United. I mean, I think he's been fabulous. I love him as a player. But I just thought Sunday was a little glimpse on what life might be like after Zlatan. The pace of Rashford gives United a completely different dimension. Jose Mourinho has always been a fantastic counter-attacking coach, so it allowed him to play more like a Jose Mourinho team. Zlatan, though, if he does go after one season, I think he'll have made an enormous contribution to that club. He's carried them this season, and he's developed some of those young players, and he's really taken on the mantle of being the leader of that team. And if he did go, that would be the biggest thing, actually, that I think they'd miss, because they're going to lose Rooney as well.
And Carrick.
Well, maybe, yeah. So there'll be a leadership gap, which is why, going back, I think he probably will stay in the end. But whether that's going to be the best thing, I don't know.
Mm. Difficult club to play well at consistently. And Herrera, he's been very underrated. Are we just seeing the best of him now?
Yeah, I think we are. I think he did a great job. I think he's come on. I think he was good last season, in fairness. You know, I sort of saw him play well. But he is reaching that level. He's so tenacious, isn't he? He's so busy. He's everywhere, isn't he?
Annoying.
He's busy, to quote Gary Neville.
Yeah.
Well, he is. He's great. You know, his man-to-man marking job on the Hazard was fantastic. You know, but he's good technically. He's, you know, very, very simple with possession. But you know, can drive forward. He's tenacious, good defence, and basically can hold that line. I think, without doubt, in the last couple of seasons, he's been one of United's best players. I think they have made some decent signings. I think Eric Bailly has been a really good buy, you know, really good. Yeah. Sort of a bit surprised that he's sort of kind of been left off, sort of, you know, young player mentions and what have you. I think, you know, to go in there almost seamlessly into that defence. And I think United have got a really nice sort of kind of structure, and you can see that with the right additions. I think Pogba, solid, but it's different when you pay £89 million for a player, and that's the thing that people we can't get over, and that's the issue. But Pogba's had a decent season, shall we say, but he's got the foundations there, I think, for a decent spell and a decent era of success. And I think Herrera will be a central part of that over the next 5 years.
Do you see United making the top four, or do you think Liverpool now have just got enough about themselves to hang in there?
I think Liverpool are the vulnerable one. I think City will have enough firepower to win the games. Liverpool started winning those games that they were not winning before. I think they will do it, but I think United will win the Europa League and be in the Champions League anyway. Wouldn't that be great? Five English teams in there. I just think United have played so many fixtures. They're tired, and it will catch up with them. It has caught up with them already. So I just don't see them winning as many of the remaining games as Liverpool.
And with Liverpool, you know, look at Simon Mignolet. He's really reasserted himself, hasn't he?
Oh, brilliant. I mean, he made a crucial save late on Sunday, didn't he? I think he made one of the saves of the season at Stoke, when, again, both games, I think last season, you could have said, well, they lost one of them. I think it was Charlie Adam, wasn't it? Had a great chance at 1-0 for Stoke. Well, that's a turning point of the season. Mignolet was much derided over the course of this season, particularly early part of the season. And I just think he's come back and really proved himself to be a really good shot stopper. Yes, there's flaws in his game, maybe, you know, kind of commanding the penalty box, but he's been crucial for Liverpool in this run. And they are just eking out these wins. Got to keep it in context also for Liverpool. I remember sort of kind of doing my pre-season predictions. I fancied them to finish fourth. And I thought that would be incredibly optimistic for Liverpool. But I fancied them just a nick in there because I think Klopp has got this energy. He's building something. I think he's good going forward long term. And I think we shouldn't lose sight of the fact if they can cling on to fourth, I think that would be a really good first full season for Jurgen Klopp. I think we shouldn't underestimate that from where they've come from. And I think they'll only get stronger, particularly if they can guarantee an offer Champions League football to new signings in the summer. I think that's great progress, that.
How do you see that team evolving then, Johnny? Let's talk about Oxlade-Chamberlain going there.
Yeah,
35 million?
Yeah, I think the price tag is eye-watering, really, for a player who's got obvious gifts but hasn't put it together yet in his early 20s now. He's not a kid anymore. But what we've seen from Jurgen Klopp is that he what I like about him is he knows what he's looking for in a player. So when he signed someone like Gini Wijnaldum, 25 million, my eyebrows were raised at that one. But he knew the role, he knew exactly what he wanted out of him. Mane was a much better player, but you know, again, he's got more out of Mane than I think we might have expected. So he clearly sees something in Ox. I think he's exactly the template: young, energetic, physically powerful, but also gifted. New defenders, maybe a proper left back.
Do you see Sacco going back there?
No, I think Sacco's bridges were burnt on Alcatraz, actually, more or less, or before then. Look, with Klopp, and we've seen it with Sturridge, it doesn't matter how good you are as a player, you've got to buy into it. You've got to be part of the gang, the ethos. You've got to do what you've got to be like Jurgen, as sort of positive and team orientated as he is. And I just don't think he's seen that in Sacco, or indeed in Sturridge. And if you're talking about the future, I think he'll leave this summer.
Let's look at the Champions League now, if we could. Yeah. All roads, or the M1. We're all hitting the M1 for Leicester this evening. Trying to get back a 1-0 deficit against Atletico Madrid is fiendishly difficult, isn't it?
Well, just look at their record. Their record is better away from home. They've built up a reputation as a counter-attacking team. They've got pace in them. They are dangerous. They were missing a couple of players in the first game. And yet, actually, Leicester, they could have basically... I mean, they were very unlucky to concede the penalty. But really, they were absolutely under the cosh at that stage. And I thought when that goal went in, I thought, oh, blimey, this is going to be a long night. But then to come back again and be so brave was very commendable. And I thought I painted a sort of when I reported on it, I painted a sort of heroic sort of kind of rear guard action, which I think it was. But actually, we've just seen this shift when you sort of kind of dwell on it a little bit more. Seen the shift that it's so important not to lose an away goal, as indeed Atletico didn't. It's seen even as a 0-0 is a decent result, because you go away from home and one of the best teams at scoring and creating chances away from home is Atletico. I think they're in the box seat. I think that Leicester, are big underdogs, capable of doing it, but big underdogs.
One of the great things about the Champions League is it gives you that platform and you can really examine a player at the highest level. You were both in Madrid. Griezmann.
Yeah.
How good is he?
Well, for me, that was a moment of seeing actually what Griezmann really is going to be as a player. I'd seen him before, always thought, yeah, he's nice, I can see the potential there. But when you're not seeing somebody all the time, you're maybe not necessarily seeing them at their best. And that might not even have been his best, but he was pretty good. And what I saw in him was, it was that Messi-like quality that he just dominated the team, absolutely dominated them. He roamed where he wanted to roam, which in the Simeone system, you've got to earn that right. His pace on the counter-attack amazed me. I didn't know he had that speed in him when he won the penalty. His intelligence, just his leadership, because that's the other sort of thing you wonder about him. So I can see now why he's going to be one of the top four or five players in the world if he's not there already. And also why probably Manchester United are going to try and break the world transfer record again to bring him this summer.
Do you think they've got a chance of getting him? Real Madrid look nailed on to me.
Well, I think they've got a chance of getting him, and I do think some of the figures will go up and up because he is fantastic. He's got so much ability, and his ability to sort of drop behind, link the play, just everything. He's got absolutely everything, and he is going to be an absolute superstar. But you're right, I think he has to make this choice. I think the biggest thing for United is, rather like with Zlatan, if they're ambitious to keep him, it's all about the Champions League. You can't, I don't think personally, I know they'd sort of attracted, you know, Pogba, for example, but
he had the history, didn't he?
Yeah. He had the history, and it's slightly different. The money was crazy as well. I just think with Griezmann, I think he will make a decision based on which team can offer me the opportunity to go and win the Champions League. Well, if a team that's after him and are definitely in for him aren't even in the competition, I think that's the decision made for him.
Mm. Where do you think Real Madrid are in their development cycle? You know, Gareth Bale isn't playing at the moment. You know, he's been quite fragile this season. Mm. What about Cristiano Ronaldo? How long do you think he's got at the very, very highest level?
Well, I'm not sure Real Madrid do development or have development cycles. They just they break all the rules, don't they? Ronaldo's he has to stay there because of the money. They can't afford, you know, commercially to lose him, marketing wise, and nobody can pay him the money, and it's a manager convenience because I don't think him and the president there are, you know, best buddies. But he'll stay there, becoming ever more the kind of goal poacher, number nine, and doing it less and less. But he's earned the right to do that. Bale's an interesting one because this was the season he was supposed to be the new Cristiano, and it hasn't quite happened. I know he's had injuries. The development, they'll just buy more really good players and keep winning and keep being the team that beat in Europe. That's what they do, isn't it?
Simple, then.
I think they'll raid the Premier League. I think they'll go for it with David De Gea. I think De Gea, I think we'll probably go there.
I think United might do it now as well.
Yeah. Well, seems that way, doesn't it? It's all moving in that direction.
Courtois? Mm.
Yeah, I think they've made up their mind. I think just a little hint towards, you know, sort of I've had is that Courtois will probably stay now. And, you know, Real Madrid, I'm sure, we'll hear those jungle drums and basically be going all out for. They had to make a choice between one of the two, and I think they obviously feel that De Gea is within range. But look, the one that I think they're massively going for is Hazard. Yeah. Hazard has got such a big decision to make. And I think Real Madrid think they've got a great chance of getting him. Chelsea are adamant that they'll time to a new contract.
It's not going away, is it?
It is not going away. It'll be the saga of the summer, whether he stays or goes. But the one thing is for sure that it will go. I think that Real Madrid will offer a huge amount. I think they'll try and throw in Morata. And I think they'll reach a certain level which Chelsea, more than any other club, can, you know, say no to. But when the player makes up his mind, and if he's pushing to go, you're in an impossible situation. Mm-hmm. And I think Hazard himself personally has got a massive dilemma this summer.
Mm. One of my favourite players is saying his farewells at the Bernabeu, Xavi Alonso. Oh. You know, he, to me, had the perfect farewell statement where he just said, lived it, loved it.
Yeah.
How good has he been?
Oh, I mean, I've played this game with friends before where you say, you know, which top footballer would you like to be? And for me, the answer's never been Messi, it's Xabi Alonso, because I think the guy's got everything as a top player, but also as an individual. He's just a classy guy, rounded person. You know, he's even got a beautiful apartment on the beachfront in San Sebastian, which don't come around once in every 50 years, and he's got one. He's been just class at four really big clubs now. Maybe should have won a little bit more Champions Leagues, but then he was part of the greatest comeback of all time in Istanbul. And he's still a really, really good player. And he combines the cerebral aspects of football with, you know, he gets stuck in as well. He didn't shy away in the Premier League. But a beautiful reader of the game, beautiful passer. And yeah, the romantic in me would love to see him get to another Champions League final, but I don't think it'll happen.
Mm. I'm just enjoying the picture, the picture of you. The man crush and wishing to be. I haven't seen your house, but yeah. I can tell you he's very composed on the ball for the England press team. The England press team, I hasten to add.
We've got a ringer. Talking of comebacks, as Johnny was doing there, Barcelona, have they got any chance of coming back 3-0 down?
It was amazing, the energy that they had, obviously, in the last round. And I just thought, wow, they're kind of, surely this is written in the stars, that basically they'll go on to do something really significant in the competition. Unfortunately, we were quickly told that actually that's probably Barcelona, and where they are now is basically is losing to PSG, and any other team would have gone out. And also, their level is losing heavily and being done, basically, by Juve. I cannot see Juve throwing this away, cannot for the life of me doing it, see it, because they're much more disciplined defensively. They've got more class players, a little bit more pedigree, I would suggest. And, you know, a manager also who I think will set up knowing what they did in the last round and make sure that doesn't happen again. I think they'll go for it. They've got attacking prowess. I don't know, they might even give us an entertaining game. Can I see a miracle happening twice? No.
No, I can see Juventus winning the Champions League.
Yeah, I mean, those great defenders and Buffon behind them, they're not going to crack in this one, are they? And if I'm talking about Alonso getting one more crack at the Champions League, well, they deserve it as well, because it's been a quest for that Juventus team. You know, they were unfortunate to run up against Barcelona a couple of years ago, but they've been a terrific side. There's a generation, their Pirlo's gone, but the rest of them remain. Dybala's such an exciting talent.
He can be anything he wants to be, that kid,
yeah,
can't
he? He's being billed as the Messi successor in Argentina, and comparisons are stupid, but he's certainly their next superstar for sure. And what Juventus have had this evolution over the last 5 years to being this team that's fantastic to watch. You know, for me, thinking about them in the Champions League, I always remember the dogged side that Conte actually played for, that sort of spoiled games and were always there or thereabout. But they're fantastic to watch. I think they probably would get my money if I was betting.
And talking of fantastic to watch, what about Monaco?
Well, I just think that they are the most entertaining team in Europe at the moment. I mean, they do score more goals, and in Jardin, they've got a coach who's really going places. He's the most understated guy. I mean, I watched them in Man City. I watched Monaco beat Man City in the return leg. I saw both games, and they were brilliant and obviously a fabulous player. But the manager is just so understated. He just kind of, he'd done his press conference, I'd finished my rewrite. A couple of us were sort of waiting, trying to find the way out, because it's sort of kind of through the back door of the Monaco's rather strange inbuilt sort of kind of stadium. If you've ever been there, you'll know what I mean. But it's sort of in between flats almost, in this bizarre place.
Above a car park.
Yeah, exactly. It's strange. And there was the manager just very, you know, sort of humbly saying, goodbye, have a nice evening, sort of thing, rucksack over his back. Unbelievable. Sneaking out the back door. He was just amazing, you know, he's just so humble and sort of kind of, he has built the most entertaining, unbelievable team. I mean, where do you start? I mean, up front, you know, I mean, it's just Mendy at left back, you can win games. Amazing, you know, and they're just brilliant to watch. Every position, you've got an entertainer. I'm sure that clubs will try and raid them this summer. That's their biggest danger. But I'd love to see them as a romantic here stay together, because they have got the goals in them and the capabilities. They will concede goals. That's the biggest problem. Mm. But they have got the capabilities to go and win the Champions League. Make no mistake about it. I think they're the outside bet, but they would be the most entertaining bet.
Should that first leg have been played when it was played?
No, not at all. And those things sicken you about both FIFA and UEFA, that they do not care. They do not care one bit, apart from the TV schedules, getting the sponsors happy, making sure that everything keeps rolling. I thought it wasn't the human decision to play. It certainly wasn't the human decision to treat Dortmund the way that they did, seemingly not really take their feelings into account. And it was really difficult that evening. I think we saw the Nuri Sahin interview for all those Dortmund players, and that's a slight sort of sadness that if this great, exciting Monaco team do go through, there'll be just a little bit of an element that, you know, maybe Dortmund didn't get a fair crack in this tie.
Mm. Let's finish where we began, really. FA Cup semi-finals. This has got the makings of a classic weekend. Who is going to emerge from this weekend?
I think Tottenham will win. I just think they're in a better place at the moment. They've got a belief in form. I think the biggest thing about against Tottenham is Wembley. I think Chelsea also will obviously be determined to kind of rebuild and go again, reshape, regroup. But I do think that Tottenham will win that game, and I think that Man City will win on Sunday. And I think you'll get a great final. I think Tottenham-Man City final will be absolutely fantastic. But I do think that, you know, City, I think, just have far too much going forward for Arsenal. And Arsenal looks so weak and short of belief defensively at the moment that I think they'll be comfortable with us.
Agree with that, John?
Yeah, I think we'll all be getting our Ricky Vila and our dealers. Old nostalgia pieces. Steve McKenzie, was it as well?
Yeah,
we'll be doing that because I agree with John. Spurs are just so good at the moment and City will have too much attacking wise for Arsenal.
I agree with the boys. Get ready for a housewarming party, Spurs fans. Tottenham to beat City in the final. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.